It is Wednesday. Coming up later on, Chris Ashmore will be joining us with business news, and we've so much to come besides. Right, some of your comments coming in this morning. A caller believes there's going to be a serious incident in Letterkenny with frustrated drivers, as is the carnage of traffic in the morning. I witnessed a vehicle with children heading down the long lane to exit up Glencar Road. He crossed into the oncoming traffic lane to exit quicker. How dangerous. A second later, there was another vehicle entering that road. Can traffic guardy not police that hospital roundabout for an hour in the morning? It's so stressful and dangerous. The one thing is, it's not up to the guards to, you know, police traffic movement. That's per se, do you know what I mean? It's not up to them to undo others' mistakes. I live in Tullybeg, Church Hill. There have been stray sheep wandering around the area for the past few weeks. A car could easily knock them down. They're in my garden now and they are a nuisance. Can whoever owns these sheep please come and collect them? We can pass on a number if need be. What's the road like at Mina Roy today, asks a listener. I would imagine most roads are... just be cautious. You never know. Like, there's no... you know, there's no blanket report on any road that I've heard, and I'm open to correction on that. But you know where there's dips and hollows, where the weather is such that there can be black ice and such? That's just what you have to be careful for. We were talking about Enoch Burke. Enoch Burke is going to jail only because he's against transgenderism and nothing else. The judgment of the judge is akin to King Herod and Pontius Pilate. Judgment trying to say he's only being jailed for breaking the law. And another thing, why is the school taking so long to hear Enoch Burke's appeal for unfair dismissal? Because part of that is that Mr. Burke has objected to people on the panel, I believe, believing he's not fair. So we run through the timeline of this, really. And as I say, people will have opinions, okay, and people are entitled to that, and I'm not contradicting those opinions. So people have opinions on why he's in prison, but I also have to sort of relate facts, but those facts can actually be interpreted two ways. So in June 2022, the Wilson's Hospital School requests that teachers call a student by a new name and use they/them pronouns. Burke publicly objects on religious grounds, citing his Christian beliefs. So as a result, a disciplinary process begins and Burke is placed on a paid administrative leave. So that's part one, you could say. Fast forward to August of 2022, the school obtains a temporary High Court injunction barring Burke from attending the school or teaching classes during his suspension. And according to court documents, the school claims Burke had previously disrupted a school event by confronting the principal about the pronoun issue, and that led to his according to reports, his initial suspension. So he had an opportunity to go then before a panel and argue his case. Then to September 2022, he's jailed for the first time for contempt of court because he continued to go to the school against the injunction. So if he hadn't gone back to school, he wouldn't go to prison at that point, right? So he could have engaged in the appeal process and made his points in that environment. Maybe he didn't want to. Maybe you support the fact that he didn't. That's fine. But he went to court at that point because he continued to attend school. You've seen the footage. You've seen the pictures, even though he was suspended at that point. So in 2022, December, he released. He was released from prison. He didn't purge his contempt. And he does not agree to fully accept or comply with the injunction, but nonetheless he is released. After the Christmas holidays, again, he returns to school. And this brings us to 2023. The High Court hearing on the dispute, the disciplinary and the injunction is set to proceed. In January 23, Burke is formally dismissed from his teaching role. So then May 2023, the High Court rules that his suspension was lawful and orders him to pay €15,000 in damages for trespass. Then September 23, he's jailed for a second time, and the judge at that time ruled that he flagrantly breached the injunction and still continued to go to school. Then in March of 24, he's ordered back to Mountjoy Prison, and at that time, the court notes he's being paid his teacher's salary pending an appeal of his dismissal. So Burke is jailed for a third time for breaching the permanent injunction that bars him from going to the school. Justice Quinn says there is conclusive evidence he violated the injunction multiple times. The judge also remarks, though, that he could purge his contempt and be released if he agrees to comply. He refused to do that. So in December 24, Burke is released from prison. And then that, you remember that daily fine, €1,400 a day if he returns to the school. And the judge also ordered steps to try to use Burke's salary to pay off $193,000 of unpaid fines that had already been accumulated. Fast forward to the middle of this year, the court allows a garnishing order on Burke's salary to collect the contempt fines, $79,000 at a time. And then reports emerge that €40,000 from his bank account may be seized to satisfy part of the fines. Then towards the end of October, the court hears that the Burke family have stopped entering the school grounds after a threat to sequester their cars used to transport him to Wilson's Hospital School. In November then, a judge orders Burke jailed for the fourth time, that was yesterday, for repeated contempt of court, saying fines and security measures have failed to deter his re-entry to the school. And the judge then states that Burke holds the key to his own prison. He could purge his contempt and be released if he gives required undertakings. And that's kind of where we're at now. So you could say it all begins in June 2022 when he refuses to use they, them pronouns. But of course, then there is this public objection where the principal is challenged, etc. So those are the facts. How you interpret them is completely up to you, by the way. In relation to artificial intelligence on AI, is it a bubble? Absolutely. Is it useful yet? Only a bit. Will it be useful eventually in ways we haven't concepted yet? More than likely. I think the dot-com bubble comparison is very apt. While the internet surged in the dot-com bubble, it also didn't disappear once that popped. We couldn't imagine today's internet before the bubble popped, and now we can't live without it. I think something similar will happen with AI. It has to be usable. It has to be usable. Now, the only thing Google has been able to really use it for, say, for instance, in their ecosystem at the moment, is through their Nest cameras, where it will tell you a woman knocked the door holding flowers, right? Who cares? I look at the camera and I'll see a woman holding flowers. There's no benefit to that as such. And in terms of other applications, it's about doctoring photos, creating videos. How is it impacting on our everyday lives? It's useful for checking spelling on a document or what have you. Or you can use it relatively effectively, you know, to do research or to help with study or whatever. But I'm on about, you know, they have so much money to recoup. I don't see how they're going to do it. And a caller says on Christmas parties, we've been celebrating the Christmas and New Year's event of the Donegal Indian Malayali community in Letterkenny for the past 15 years, attended by Christians, Hindus and Muslims without any issues. It may be related specifically to the rules of those particular companies. And that's it. That's common sense. No more so than I would expect any other community or religion to change their event for me. You know, I would love to go to an Indian festival and call it by its Indian name and let me go and celebrate with them and understand their culture, share their celebration. I would never, ever expect a different religion or race or what have you to change for me. I wouldn't. I wouldn't find anything they did offensive unless it was called something very offensive, right? Or even marginally offensive. I think sort of HR companies too can lose the plot a little bit. And as you heard here, there are multiple communities celebrating Christmas and New Year's events, and that's the way it should be. Happily understanding each other, respectfully of each other, sharing the joy, sharing what's important to someone else, and learning in the process. Now, we were talking a little earlier on, weren't we, about one person's observation of younger people on tablets or phones with headphones on in restaurants. And I suppose it kind of meandered into what we're going to be talking now. We're joined on the programme by Alex Cooney, CEO of CyberSafe Kids. Good morning, Alex. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning. How are you?
It's great. Yeah, great to have you with us. Right. So there was one headline here, which I read, why almost every teen in the country is now exposed to scams and grooming. And this is because of, I suppose, their access to their internet connected devices.
Yeah, that's right. So what we found consistently really over the last few years is that by the age of 13, 100% of children are reporting owning at least one smart device, and in many cases more than that, you know, tablets, games consoles, and the smartphones, in some cases VR headsets and other smart devices and wearables. So yeah, it they're very pervasive and very accessible, and I think all of us can relate to seeing not just children but adults as well on their devices out and about.
Yeah, because the pressure is on to sort of match expectations and wants. And, you know, this is why I think a lot of parents are in favour of, no devices in schools up until a certain age. And if a certain amount sort of agree to that, it takes the pressure off, right? I think it often comes down to a lot of parents are going to be asked for certain things. It's really whether we decide to agree to that or not.
So these devices will feature off in many cases on children's Christmas lists. And if children are in that younger age category, it's really a decision about whether they're ready for all that comes with the device, and also whether you as the parent or carer is ready for all that comes with it. Because what we would say is you really need to be alongside them, especially in those early years. Keep them where you can see them, be checking in with them. Absolutely avoid, and this extends right up into the teenage years, having devices in bedrooms overnight. So that's what, we liken it often to the idea of a child riding a bike. You wouldn't give a toddler an adult bike and say, off you go. What you would do is give them the appropriate sized bike with the training rails, with the safeguards. You'd use the helmets and the knee pads and sometimes the elbow pads. You take them to a safe place and you're there alongside them, shouting out instructions and reminders. And that is something you'll be doing for a number of years until you get them to a point where they can go off independently. And that's what we're encouraging parents to think about in terms of their children's online. Keep them alongside you.
Yeah, exactly. And Santa might not be listening to us and might still bring whatever the kids are asking for. But ultimately, Santa's away and it's the parents that are left in the house to deal with what is to follow. Are there alternatives, though? Do you know, people are very switched on now at certain ages, Alex, and they'll say, I want this, and they'll know why they want it. Are there viable alternatives that sort of seed a little bit to them, but also then, you know, parents can feel more comfortable that they're not fully locked in?
That's right. And actually, so this is all in light of us releasing a guide this year to try and help inform parents about the various devices and give them information so that they can make more informed decisions. We released it for the first time last year, and we've updated it and included this year a section on alternatives, because increasingly there are, and that's the good news. So I know a lot of parents would say, oh, well, I felt like I had to get little Johnny the device because, you know, he's walking home from school or he's out, you know, all this after school stuff, and I want to keep in touch with him. I want to know where he is. So we've got now things like watches that you can add. The Explorer watch is a good example, where you as the parent or carer can add the numbers. So it's only the numbers that you add that can ring that watch. You can track them in many cases as well. So they just have that peace of mind without that connectivity to a browser or to gaming, online gaming. So, you know, those can be very useful for younger kids. As they get older and progress towards secondary school, another alternative, and I'm sure there'll be more of these types of phones in the future, is the balance phone. So it's a kind of more lockdown experience. So it has some connectivity. Obviously, it has. You can download apps like WhatsApp. You can download Spotify, Google Maps. But the point of it is that it's more purposeful use. You're picking that device up for a reason, to use it to make a call, to use it to listen to music, or to get from A to B. It doesn't connect to video sharing, social media, online gaming, or any of that adult content. So I think it is certainly a useful alternative for parents who aren't ready for all that comes with a fully connected device.
Yeah, and I'm more familiar with the sort of Android ecosystem than I would be for iPhones, but you can set up a tablet or a phone for a child. So this is at the very beginning, and you can limit what apps, how much time, and what have you. And a child, no matter how IT expert they are, can't circumnavigate that. They can't. You have to put in a password to download an app, and as you say, you can still pick and choose which app. So the facilities are there. It's just, I think it's just about us, you know, really a lot of the time, because even the solutions you're talking of, Alex, there about that watch, that's to satisfy our hyper anxiety that we have now, isn't it? Really,
yeah.
It's so that I know what the right thing is for the from a child, but I need to know exactly where they are all of the time, whereas we had the, I had the freedom to do whatever I kind of wanted because I didn't have to do it online or whatever. And I just want to remind people too about where kids can be targeted by horrible adults. Consoles are, I don't think parents get the fact that consoles are a hive of predatory adults through Roblox, through Fortnite, through Minecraft. So it's not just your tablets and the traditional apps and what have you. You know, we have very nasty adults that will that can go in through the headset of the console as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the consoles are internet connected devices and they provide this access. So when we're talking about devices, we're talking about that full range. And you're absolutely right that Roblox, just you mentioned that one, that is the most popular online environment that children under the age of 13 go to. So that has been increasing in popularity over the years. It used to be YouTube, far and away the most popular for under 13s. That is still really popular, but Roblox has now exceeded that. And parents often feel a real sense of security with it because it looks childlike. It has a very low minimum age rating. You know, the avatars are blocked. It's marketed towards children. So inevitably, you'll get that question when you're doing a parent's talk around Roblox. You know, isn't that the safe one, though? Isn't that one okay? Do I really need to keep an eye on it? And the reality is, yes, you do, because there, as you've said, there can be... Roblox is effectively a universe. It's not one game. It's a multitude of user-generated games. And oftentimes they're putting quite a low age rating to make it more accessible. So, you know, the checks and balances aren't always there. So there can be inappropriate content, but there can also be inappropriate contact, which is something you alluded to there. And there've been a couple of pieces of research over the last year or two that have really highlighted the dangers with that. So what we say with Roblox, just like any other game, especially when they're younger, keep them where you can see them. Have them in family spaces where you can more easily check in, avoid use of these things in the bedroom. You know, headsets can also be a block in terms of what's going on in a game. So, yeah, be mindful of those things. It's not to say don't ever let them play these games. Of course, kids can have enormous amounts of fun. My kids love certain games as well. But it is about having that awareness, you know, getting the advice. And
just so parents are aware, what often happens in these spaces is initial contact is made there, and then the bad adult will try and get the child over to a different platform.
More private communications,
exactly,
like WhatsApp.
Right. So so all of this will not necessarily happen in the Roblox space, but they will try and incentivize the child for whatever reason to sort of try, let's take the conversation over here or something along those lines. So just be conscious of that as well too.
Well, and sometimes the children will think they're talking to a child, you know, so that kind of trust will be there. Absolutely. So we do need to be mindful. And obviously what we say to children is, you know, ideally don't be gaming with people that you don't know in real life or offline. Mm. But, you know, we also know that children really do. So we see this from our data. We ask kids this exact question and we see that plenty of children will. So what we'll then say is, make sure that no conversation extends beyond a game, that you're not sharing any personal information. You're not saying your name. You're not saying your age, your location, any of that personal information. And when that game ends, so does that conversation, so that you're not, you know, you're avoiding some of these redirections.
So where can people go? Because they might have got, right, I like the idea of that watch, or maybe they want more details on some of the phones or what have you. And just, I suppose, want to see the research in more detail. Go to CyberSafe Kids. Is it .ie?
So cybersafekids.ie, so you can download our guide, the gadget gift guide, or you can flick through it on our website. We also have a free webinar for parents across the country, 27th of November at 7:30 p.m. You can register on our website, cybersafekids.ie. We'd love to see you there, and two of our team will be there to walk you through the guide and answer your questions.
All right, thanks so very much indeed. Alex Cooney, CEO of CyberSafe Kids. 100% of... young people age 13 have a smart device or own a smart device. Remarkable, isn't it? Again, sorry if you feel like we're bombarding you. It's just the earlier subject ended up kind of crossing over with that one. But listen, maybe it's useful information. A caller says, Enoch Burke should take his case to Europe. He might be heard there and get fair play. Why would he not turn up at school? He's still employed and paid. I just can't believe how quiet people are about this. The world has gone crazy. say, for instance, it's because of for this reason. But let's say someone was asked to go. Say someone was asked to leave a school for something else, something inappropriate, for an example. But they were still employed and paid. Would you be in favour of them turning up at the school? Do you know what I mean? So the law can't really bend from one person to the next. And I would be very interested in what case he might take to Europe. Is it the case he can only take to Europe would be that he's allowed to go to school every day, but he can't teach because European law wouldn't cover his employment law, which is still the subject of an appeal. That process hasn't concluded. A caller says, this is all stemming from the child wanting to be called they or them. I think you should be called by what your birth cert says. What the Burke family have been put through is terrible. The school should have been more understanding to Enoch, in my opinion. It is not about his beliefs against transgenderism. It's more about the principle of being forced to adhere to transgenderism. I know many teachers who won't call students by their new names, but only by their birth names. How common is it that nowadays that children in school sort of have different names or are called they, them? I don't have any of my children in that space at the moment, to be honest with you. So I don't really get the feedback around the dinner table, so to speak. You see, again, it was the bit of a public spat, I think, that sort of triggered. It wasn't because he wouldn't say they, them. It was how he objected to saying they, them, which initially led to his suspension. I just came over the road in Mina Roy, and it's not too bad. Just be careful. Thank you. That's on the roads. All right. Keep your calls, comments coming in to us. Loads more coming up on the program this Wednesday. Apologies if you're watching the stream and I put Thursday in and you're thinking, well, I've lost a day. No, you've got two Thursdays now because there's another one coming tomorrow. All right. The next local elections are in 2029. There could be a general election before that. You just never know. But anyway, you know, the work starts now, I suppose, for See Her Elected to encourage or support more women into elected politics. Dr. Michelle Marr, Programme Manager of See Her Elected, is with me. Good morning to you. Nice to see you again.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks for joining us. Right, so you have to plan ahead. It's 2025 now. Is it 2029 when the next local elections
are?
It's every 5 years, isn't it? We've just come through them. I lose track.
And I'm sure your listeners are going, have we not had three elections in a row? Why on earth is somebody on talking about another one? But we know with certainty that the next local elections where we elect people to Donegal County Council will be in May or June of 2029. And we'll also know with certainty pretty much the majority of the people who will be running, and they are the people who are already elected there, the sitting councillors. Now, at the moment, we have 37 county councillors representing the people of Donegal and Lifford. Out of that 37, there's only three women there, which puts us in last place in the league table of female representation. And I know we like to think up here we're different, but that's not really the kind of difference that we're looking for. So See Her Elected are, you know, I suppose there's a call here to the women in Donegal that even though this is a couple of years away, we need to start thinking about this and thinking about it pretty seriously now, because the work we do in 2026 and 2027 will stand to us when those elections come around.
Now, there is a new guidebook that is being launched. Minister of State John Cummings is involved, as is Cathy Sheridan, who's a journalist and commentator with the Irish Times. So this sort of like a step-by-step guide from now to 29? Yeah.
It's pretty much the closest thing you get to a manual on how to run for election in this country. Because, you know, we hear a lot about, well, you know, why are there so few women, you know, and there's kind of people talk about childcare and confidence. But I believe it's not knowing where to start or who to ask. You know, if you're not in a political family, and we've plenty of them around the county, you know, if you're not already in a political party, but you kind of see, you know, you'd like to know what's involved or where would I start if I wanted to think about this seriously. So the answer is now available, and we would like to see it get into the hands of as many women in Donegal as possible. It's 160 pages of every single piece of practical information you could ever want to know about how to run for election. And that information, Greg, it's usually like something, you know, if that's, where was that information before this? You know, it was usually held in the heads of those who are well-versed in politics and political parties. And I would even go as far to say that it was predominantly held in the heads of men. So what we wanted to do in See Her Elected was to get that information, the practical step-by-step information on how do I go about this, get it out into the open and into the hands of the women in rural Ireland, and especially in Donegal, where there are so very few women in local politics.
Yeah, and I think really, I don't think this is a woman's issue, to be honest with you. I genuinely believe it, and it certainly isn't in the woke, under the woke umbrella. I genuinely think that the more representative our council is of the democratic the demographic of the county, the better it is, right? So you know, if you had, I mean, can you imagine if you had 15 or 16 women on Donegal County Council? You know, it would change. I think it would change significantly, and I think it would change for the better purely because it would be more representative. And that's not doing anyone in there a disservice at the moment. Now they're part of what they're part of, right? And they're not anti-women or anything along those lines. But any scenario is better, you know, when you've got people that represent more people, you know. And I know the fellows represent women too, but you get where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I absolutely do. It's about the decision making that happens in Donegal County Council. And I often, if I'm kind of explaining this, I kind of nearly turn it on its head. Would the men of Donegal stand for it if there was only three men and 34 women over in Lifford making decisions that affect
well
everyone?
It depends how the county it depends. if there was no traffic, no potholes and some proper decisions, I don't care what their bits are. But I do take your point. Yeah, it would. We would look on and go, "What's wrong with us?"
Well, you know, and it's I suppose a really entrenched pattern. We're so used to looking at the makeup of Donegal County Council that perhaps we don't even see it as a problem. But if we go back over the last 100 years, there's only ever been 14 women elected in total to Donegal County Council. I mean, that isn't even a football team. And I was so annoyed about this recently that I decided to go back and dig out old copies of newspapers and try and count up the number of different men who've walked in there. And I stopped counting at around 250. So, you know, and again, putting that into football team terms, the men who've represented the people of Donegal could make up about 17 football teams between them, and the women can't even make up one.
And so there's the hurdles. I could go over the hurdles again, right? But there's no point me doing this with you every time. But the barriers, it seems at this point, are not going to be broken down until such time, I think, as there are people in positions of power that can work on that. So it's a chicken and an egg. So I think the obvious barriers that we always mention, they're not really going anywhere. And I think for local politics to change, and that always then feeds up to national politics, it is going to take the election of a cohort of women that are in there bringing motions and talking about how the council can be more inclusive and equally, if not more, effective.
Yeah, I agree with you that, I mean, we all have our own different way of seeing a problem and understanding what the solution to that problem might be. And that's shaped by our lives. And we all have different, you know, our lives in Donegal aren't the same. But so what's missing from the Donegal County Council is that really, really important perspective that women bring to both the solution, be it the traffic in Letterkenny, to the problem and what the solution might be. And you mentioned national politics there. I mean, there was yesterday we saw a reshuffle in the cabinet with it going back up to four women. And, you know, I suppose Helen McEntee actually is interesting because, as far as I know, she's the only member of the government that didn't start in a county council. Now, I don't like kind of describing county councils as a where people start off
like a feeder pool.
Nationally, yeah, because I think that takes away from the important work that our county councillors actually do. But, you know, if we're looking for a change nationally and locally, where we just have a wider range of people involved in the decision making in the county, then I think it starts at the local level and it starts with Donegal County Council.
A caller says, I'd be far more worried about the lack of genuine working class people in politics rather than the lack of women. We seem to be governed by teachers and business people. They're not struggling to make ends meet in the real world. Well, business people can struggle and teachers aren't exactly over-resourced. I take the point that the listener is making, but it's actually not contradicting exactly what we're talking about. They want a more representative council. It's not one or other. So you could have more working class, if you want to describe people as that. They could be women, they may not be women, but you could have more women. It's that the council is more reflective of the lived reality of people. And with the best will in the world, you know, that 50% of the population, a little bit more than that, are women.
Yeah. And I mean, the caller makes a valid point, which I suppose then would ask us to look at how council business is conducted. And if you look at the occupations of people who are already there, a lot of them are actually full-time councillors. They don't have another occupation. But because council hours are the work that councillors do, the meetings tend to be quite long. They can be at antisocial hours. So it actually rules out quite a lot of people even considering it. You know, PAYE workers, people who have long commutes to work, people who have caring responsibilities. So I suppose that's a wider question. And perhaps if there was a more diverse mix of people in Donegal County Council and indeed other county councils, then how the business of a council is conducted might start to change so that it would be more family friendly, more work friendly, and that would benefit everybody.
And that was my point in that that's the chicken and egg, isn't it? That's one of the barriers. And does that change? Does that change until such time as there is a critical mass of people who have an interest in it changing?
Yeah.
God forbid there would ever be 15 or 16 women on DCC. Women and men stand for election and the best person wins. There wasn't much gender balance in the presidential election.
There wasn't. And women and men do stand, but men stand in much greater numbers.
The one thing I will say, if I don't mind, go back to the presidential election, because this actually talks a little bit to what's going on in politics. You might notice, and I was talking about this issue last week. It's actually you can look at the age of the candidates, all right? So and I mean this with respect, but the way politics are, that those old women are of an age where they've had their children and arguably their career, and they can dedicate the time that's required to that job. And the fella is in working age, as far as I'm aware, too, but can easily accommodate. So I think there's a bit of that, too, in local politics, right? That you kind of have to be at a certain age before you maybe are represented. I think the way the council is set up, you know, working mums, young mums or what have you, they're excluded because you simply couldn't effectively, sorry, you can because some fantastic women have done it, be an active member of the council and take on all the other responsibilities that women do, primarily caring, etc.
Yeah, like it or not, the stark reality for a lot of women's lives is that we're very time poor, because we do take on the bulk of caring responsibilities within families. But again, if there were more women in Donegal County Council, would we be looking at childcare, free, available, plentiful childcare being something that the council would be trying to put into place for the women of Donegal, or creche facilities within the council itself for the councillors? You know, I think it takes people who experience the caring responsibilities and the reality of it to be able to say, well, you know, this is not how the council should conduct its business. We need more people with different experience and different views in here. And how can we go about doing that?
You know, I understand what the listener says about the best people get in, and that's quite right, but there's it's far more than that, because the majority of female candidates we're seeing are independent, so it's a struggle to get to begin with, because you don't have a party backing you up. You're in against people that have been in the council for 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years. You know, there is a reluctance for people to step aside, for an example, to allow a party to put forward a candidate with a different background or a different sex, for an example. So there's lots. It's not just a case of it's more nuanced, right? Because you have it a lot of independents sort of kind of looking for an independent vote, and then you've got a lot of the big names who are backed by big parties. So anyway.
I your caller did say there that, you know, men and women did run, but I wanted to make the point that there were 91 candidates who ran for Donegal County Council. Some of us will remember with horror the length of the ballot papers we had to fill out. Among that, there was only 19 women. And you'd have to ask why. You know, are they waiting to be asked? Well, I'm here asking them now. But I'd like to kind of maybe bring in the political parties in this. You know, how interested really are they in running women? If we look at the three biggest parties in the country and what they did in Donegal, Sinn Féin had 19 candidates in the county, eight women, which is 42%, and one of them got elected, Dakota Nick Bannan. Fianna Fáil ran 15 candidates, but only managed two women, which is only 13%. And there wasn't a single female candidate for Fine Gael. So yeah, I would have to ask, you know, how serious are the political parties about this? And again, this is something while I'm on talking about this now, for women who might think, well, you know, I'd be interested in that. I kind of favour this party or that party. We'd be asking women to think about joining those political parties now and show your worth so that when it comes around to the selection conventions, when the local branches are selecting who the candidates are going to be, it's not the usual lineup or it's not a foregone conclusion.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the national launch event is in Longford on Friday, the 21st of November 2025. There'll also be workshops and what have you in the run up to the local elections in 2029. You can get all the details on seeherelected.ie. But for now, Dr. Michelle Marr, thank you so much for joining us. And we'll chat to you soon. Look after yourself. All right. I appreciate your time. Anna is with me. Anna, are you there?
Good morning, Greg.
How are you getting on, Anna? Right, so we had one HR company suggesting that people, you know, in working environments should maybe avoid calling the Christmas party the Christmas party and instead call it the end of year celebrations. How does that sit with you, Anna?
Well, it doesn't. I think it's one of these fluffy ideas. I think it first surfaced in Australia, actually, after the pandemic. I suppose my view, coming from a Christian background, it's important to leave, as it were, Jesus is the reason for the season, as we would believe. I think there isn't a problem with it being called Christmas party. If we want to call it end of year party, have it New Year's Eve. I mean, I suppose my problem is if we start with something as maybe people would say frivolous as changing the name of a Christmas party, you know, where does it lead? We in Ireland and across the world, naturally, people travel to Christmas markets all over the place. I think, you know, we go into retail, we have our Christmas services, our Christmas masses. We have everything, as I said, to do with retail. Where do we draw the line?
And who's calling for Anna too? Do you know, I don't hear religious groups saying, so this is coming from a third party,
not.
You know?
Of course it is. I mean, I live in Ardrath and we have a very diverse community here. We go carol singing, we turn on our Christmas lights, we have the whole community involved, a lot of Ukrainian people involved, for example. No one has a problem. I think when you start and say, you know, we're changing this name of a Christmas party to an end of year party, we are saying we have a problem. But as you say, Greg, it's not coming. This is a third party. Yeah. We're not hearing this from any of other faiths or none.
Like I was saying this earlier on, I mean, you wouldn't expect, if you were in another country or this, you wouldn't expect another faith to change. You'd go along, you want to be part of, you want to understand their celebrations, you want to respect them, maybe enjoy it, and respect what they stand for. Yeah, that's and I think most people are like that.
Who's calling
for this change? How are we all going to get along and understand each other, if especially if it's one group of individuals are constantly changing?
Absolutely. are changing. And I mean, as you say, you respect the culture into which you move or live or work or whatever. And Ireland, I would like to think we're still a Christian country. Some may differ. I don't think we are. I think we're welcoming, we're inclusive. And when you talk about other cultures, we need to remember our own people. I mean, when you go to diversity, we need to include maybe people with disabilities, their Christmas party, making sure there's an area that they're free, they're happy to work, be there. And I mean, for other cultures to come in, we change our foods, we change our drinks. Some cultures don't believe in drinking alcohol or whatever. But, you know, I think Ireland is losing the run of itself in some ways. We need to hold on to our faith. We need to hold on to our culture. We give up too easily, I think. And people lose respect for us maybe in the future if we don't hold on to our beliefs.
Yeah, and then what happens is and we've had some comments saying, well, if people don't want this, that and the other, should go home and stuff like that. This is what people don't understand. That is the kind of emotion that people create with these kind of suggestions, and suggestions out of nowhere. And I listen, thank you so much for your time, and I'm sure it's beautiful in beautiful Ardra.